Well, it's 6:06, and believe it or not, pardon me, it's 6:06. Good morning. Believe it or not, they're saying that, nothing to laugh at, but they're saying that New Mexico is becoming a child porn capital. I guess I'm laughing somewhat in disbelief. It seems like we got enough problems around here. Anyway, it is the 23rd. Do you have plans for Thanksgiving? If you don't, then I would really suggest you contact friends or family and make those connections, because it's going to be depressing if you get to Thanksgiving and you're sitting in front of a Swanson dinner watching TV. All right, so Not a super busy weekend, but from the last couple of weeks, we've had, a lot of depressing, I guess, would be the way to explain it. We've had some scary, we've had maddening news. We have a president who's absolutely, seems totally opposed to, I don't know, just common sense president who, I actually went back in this book that I have, the Amateur, with Edward Klein, and started reading again about his Obama's style and everything. And you'd be interested to know that, for example, he's kind of famous for being disconnected in, even in the beginning of his political career, he was apparently sure from a very young age he was going to be somebody spectacular. And so anyway, I'll get into that a little bit later, but let's get into some of the sports. And New Mexico State has 3 wins in a row. Isn't that amazing? They went out and beat UL Lafayette for 3rd win in a row. So that's got to be happy news for football fans in this town. And let's give you some scores here. NCAA football. And just going off of, say, the top 25, number 1, Clemson, 33. Wake Forest, 13. Number 2, Alabama, 56. Charleston Southern, 6. number 3 Ohio State, 14 number 9 Michigan State, 17. That was a big upset. Number 4 Notre Dame, 19 Boston College, 16. Number 5 Iowa, 40 Purdue, 20. Number 10 Baylor, 45. Wow. Number 6 Oklahoma State, 35. They're upset there. Number 18 TCU, 29. Number 7 Oklahoma, 30. Nail biter on that one. Number 8 Florida, 20. Florida Atlantic, 14. Number 11 Stanford, 35. Beats California, 22. And situates itself for a shot at the Rose Bowl. And the Ducks beat US, I believe it was USC. And there are now 18 in the polls, but they don't have a shot at the Pac-12 crown. Number 12, Michigan, 28, Penn State, 16. Number 13, Utah, 9, UCLA, 17. Number 14, Florida State, 52, Chattanooga, 13. Number 15, LSU, 17. Number 22, Ole Miss, 38. Number 16, Navy, 44, Tulsa, 21. That's amazing. Navy's doing pretty well this year. Number 17, North Carolina, 30, Virginia Tech, 27. Number 19, Houston, 17, Connecticut, 20. Number 20, Northwestern is had 13, and Wisconsin, number 25, has 7. Number 21, Memphis, 12, Temple, 31. And as I said, number 23, Oregon, 48. Number 24, USC, 28. So it looks like that my Ducks will be in the in a bowl. All right, so NFL football, there were some great games over the weekend. And we got Buffalo versus New England tonight. That is going to be an exciting game. Late last night, Arizona and Cincinnati played, and that was an exciting game. Green Bay seems to have gotten back on its feet a little bit. But I'll get you these scores. Anyway, you're going to be happy with what I tell you about Dallas and the fans of the Broncos are going to be happy. So we've got Oakland 13, Detroit 18. Detroit now has 3 wins. Atlanta 21, Indiana 24. Atlanta was way ahead and allowed Matt Castleback to come back. Carolina 44, Washington 16. Kansas City 33, San Diego 3. San Francisco 13, Seattle 29. San Francisco has just become a punching bag. And let's get into a few clips here for you. Here is from your Cardinal game last night. Great game.
Carson Palmer and the Cardinals hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals lead 7-0. Palmer back in the pocket finds Darren Fells in the end zone. 18-yard pass. Cardinals tie the game up. Palmer again here with some time. Finds John Brown in the end zone. Brown doing his best James Brown, kind of. Fourth quarter, 11:29 remaining here. Jeremy Hill rumbles into the end zone, gets into a scuffle after the play. Look who he's fighting with. His former LSU teammate, Tyrann Mathieu. Bengals cut the lead to 28-21. Then Dalton finds Tyler Eifert for the touchdown. Bengals within 3. So just over a minute to play. Mike Nugent's 43-yard attempt is good. We've got a tied game. 6 seconds on the clock. A field goal will do it. Cardinals hang on a win, 34-31, improving to 8-2 on the season.
When I saw Carson Palmer take that team down at the last minute, 1 minute left, I was impressed. It was really amazing. All right, so here is your pack. Your pack is not doing as well as they used to, but here we go.
Teddy Bridgewater, Aaron Rodgers, Vikings, Packers. First quarter, Vikings down 3-0. Bridgewater first to Kyle Rudolph, makes the catch, breaks the tackle, little hop, skip, and a walk into the end zone. 47-yard touchdown. Vikings lead 6-3. Closing seconds of the half. Aaron Rodgers' turn. Right in there to Randall Cobb. Packers take the 16-6 lead. Third quarter here, Adrian Peterson cuts left, goes into the end zone. He's in for the touchdown. Vikings cut into the lead. It's now 19-13. Let's go to the fourth. Rodgers, rolling. Time. What a throw to James Jones. Packers up 25-13. Then Rodgers scrambles. Flips it to Jones for the two-point conversion. Got a lot of heat last week, but they love him again. Packers win it.
Now, the Tampa Bay, Jameis Winston had five touchdowns in a game. He set a record or tied a record in the NFL for a rookie quarterback, five touchdowns. I think he had four touchdowns in the first half. Here is some of your Broncos. And yes, I got to tell you something that's very disappointing to people that love Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning was given the news that he was not going to be starting because he's got this plantar fasciae, whatever. There's this thing that runs between basically your toes and your heel, the front of your foot and the back of your foot. And he has this is partially severed on his foot, and it's very painful. And they say that's probably has a lot to do with why he couldn't plant and throw very well. In the last game, he had four interceptions and a fumble. But they gave the starting job, or they handed it over to Brock Osweiler. And Peyton Manning refused to talk to him, even though the team that they were playing, he knows about quite a bit. He knows the coach. So he could have gotten his replacement ready. He absolutely refused to even talk to him and was not on the sideline. So anyway, he was getting treatment, but basically it sounds like Peyton Manning is going to leave the league kicking and screaming. Here's that game.
Brock Osweiler looking to be the first Broncos quarterback to start and win besides Peyton since Tim Tebow did it in 2011. It's also his 25th birthday today. And what a start. 48-yard touchdown pass to Demaryius Thomas. Broncos go up 7-0. So Broncos are up 10-9 here early in the fourth quarter. Again, a perfectly timed throw. Broncos now up 17-9. Now 24 seconds left in the game. The last attempt for the Bears. Jeremy Langford, 2-yard touchdown run. Bears now trail 17-15. Here's the two-point conversion attempt. Bears can't get it done. Osweiler ends his day 24-27 for 250 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. The Broncos win it 17-15.
Pretty exciting, huh? They're still up in their division. Here is wow, Miami Gardens, Florida. I used to live there. When I was living in Miami, it was not too far from the stadium, actually. But here's your Cowboys.
Tony Romo is back. Cowboys hoping to snap a 7-game losing streak. They haven't been able to win without him. First quarter here, drops back into his own end zone. Scrambles. Darren McFadden. Able to get it. McFadden finished with 129 rushing yards. It's the second most in the game this season. Second quarter here, Romo. Deep to Terrence Williams for the touchdown. Williams pulls it in. Cowboys up 14-0. Romo, a lot of pressure on him from the Dolphins here. But his pass gets intercepted by Neville Hewitt. Romo's second interception of the game. So Tony Romo and Dez Bryant, they set a unique Cowboys record on Sunday. They're able to score 50 touchdowns together. Cowboys win it 24-14.
I wonder who watches all these. I mean, who comes up with all of these You know, all of these freaking records that supposedly, some of them are so obscure anyway, 50 touchdowns, good for Tony Romo and Dez Bryant. The game, NMSU 37-34. Oh, my gosh. I mean, this team, 3 wins is a lot this year, so well done to them. And I guess just when you're ready to give up on them, they turn it around. All right, so we're going to take a break here and come back and talk about, I'll get into your state stuff a little bit later, but I want to get into some more of this national and international stuff because it was so hot and heavy last week. And I know that people, there was somebody who was texting me all over the weekend trying to get me to change my mind on Syria. 620 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450. That's 523-1450 to call in. Don't have my text machine with me. I've momentarily displaced it. But we'll be right back to talk about those Syrians. So we've got an attack in Bali, which I'm sure that you probably heard about. And it was, I mean, the thing is that it was not long after the Paris attack, and it is, depressing, but it's also frightening to understand that there's coordinated attacks that are going on, and our government wants to make sure that we understand that we need to, you know, continue to bring these people in here. I find it unnerving that the government doesn't seem to want to. When I say, you know, you might say, well, it's Obama. I don't really know who's calling the shots in the government, but I do know that the way things are being handled is absolutely ridiculous because, and this is kind of what I was trying to get at earlier. If you've got a government that is in touch with what the people want, you can say that the people are ignorant, and many people in America are. You can claim that the government knows best, and oftentimes I'm sure the government does know best. You can claim that the average person really doesn't have a say in the policy of the nation, which is technically true. But you know, in all this stuff, you begin to encroach on an area where the government is, you know, is not really following any rules other than what the people running it think that it should be doing, which is another word for tyranny. And we're getting away from the type of government that the founders wanted for us. And here's the thing that we should remember is that I'm trying to multitask, which I'm terrible at. I'm trying to find a clip here for you. We've got to put things in a, we have to find a manner of doing things in which liberty is preserved. Within doing that, we will find the best way to do things, because the more individuals that are having their voices heard, the more informed the government is. The government is never meant to be this autonomous agent kind of operating on its own. And that's one of the things I wanted to bring up about this story about Obama in this book called The Amateur, which has really some startling information in it about the president. His manner of decision making is such that he, and to me this is extremely unnerving to hear about. He doesn't look for input from other people on a lot of issues. For example, if they said if they brought up a group to him and he didn't think that they were terrorists, he wouldn't even read the briefing on them because he had already made up his mind that they weren't terrorists. And so, I mean, which causes you to ask, how would he, you know, how would he get new information in? You know, and I mean, what is he working on that's so important that that he can't risk bringing in more facts? I mean, when you think about it from that angle, it's absolutely extraordinary and shocking that he would develop that mindset. But it is apparent that he's had that mindset ever since he's come into office and before that. I mean, people talk about how he was in the university, and you might think it would be fun to have a talk show and pick on somebody like Obama. I don't really like to bring his name up. I made up my mind after he was reelected I was just going to try to ignore him, but you can't when he's in the middle of so many decisions. And so many of the decisions that he's making appear to be ill-advised or underinformed. And so, for example, the president gets up and says, in so many words, we're going to continue after the Syrian bombings. And after it turns out that some of the bombers in Paris were Syrians, and the fact the FBI has said that you can't find, or the Greeks actually said this, it's impossible to really pick out of the crowd terrorists. There would be no way to know. Greece has had hundreds of thousands of Syrians pass through its borders. You don't even know who's a Syrian. Rationally speaking, how would you decide who's a Syrian versus, a Saudi? Similar culture, similar language. They don't have any records. So what I'm getting at is that, I mean, I'm not picking on this guy because I've got a bone to pick with him, and I, you know, this is my chance to settle the score. I'm bringing it up because it's so frightening, this idea that we'll change after we have a catastrophe. You know, that's my impression. We're going to bring in these people, and then if there's some sort of a catastrophe, then we'll change our method. And the president has got this really, the more I think about it, reminds me of school, high school, these kids that kind of hung out at the smoking table or whatever. You know, the president's a smoker, but these people that hung out and tried to be cool, never got too excited. You know, this kind of walk slow. That's who the president is, as far as I can tell. And I guess it served him well, but it's not serving us well now. And I am convinced that we need to change our approach to this issue, because we're going to get somebody in who knows a lot about killing people, and they're going to show up in a major city with some of their friends, and there is going to be absolute carnage. And you know, there's no, in my opinion, no reason to bring Syrians into this country right now. If they're from a hotbed of terrorism and you can't tell who's a terrorist and who's not, there's absolutely no excuse for doing it. And I will say this again, my impression is the president doesn't feel anything for other people. And that's one of the things that was pointed out in this book. He does not have a sense of connection to other people. And they said that, you know, Bill Clinton was kind of irritated that he never got a call from Obama asking for advice, and that he got a lot of calls from George W. Bush. And somebody replied to him, you know, he doesn't call anybody. He doesn't enjoy anybody's company, and he prefers to be by himself. Now, why he decided to run for office, I don't know. But I do have some information for you on the, and I've got a phone call here on the Bali. Well, actually on border situation right here, more people crossing the border than we've ever observed. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Hey, what's up?
Don't you feel like maybe this is kind of the attitude of, I don't know, like a dictator? Somebody who just doesn't need anybody else's input? Someone who just is going to make the decisions just because he thinks he can?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that that's true, but he's not even, I mean, I've never, okay, so I feel like the media has covered this guy's history up and his mistakes up so much that we've never had a chance to really respond to him, and now the media is complicit in whatever attacks happen or whatever disasters happen on his watch. But I mean, I do think he's got the attitude of a tyrant, but I mean, all of these kind of leftist heroes had the same mindset.
Yes, that's all I'm kind of getting at. I mean, Stalin, you know, the brothers down in Cuba, the guy in Venezuela, aren't his actions very similar?
Well, his attitude is similar. I don't know if his actions are similar, but why would you say his actions are similar?
Well, because he's basically, you know, put his thumb in the eye of the process, the constitutional process, where, you know, he just does things by fiat. He just declares them.
Yeah.
Even when the populace is against it, you know, I read an article where they said he's constantly saying, you won't go by what the public says except when it suits him. Then he pulls out the polls.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any doubt about that. I don't know. I just think that he, I don't want to say that he doesn't try, but one of the stories that came out is that he's kind of famous for not showing up to these briefing meetings. And then when he's got a decision to make, they hand him a briefing book. He'd kind of leaf through it real quick and say, you know, this is what I want to do here. And the idea that he communicated was that he is so brilliant. What other people spend possibly years agonizing over, he can decide in a few minutes. He's had a spectacular series of mistakes, you know?
Oh, it's really been something. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I wouldn't put it past him that if something serious happened, he would suspend elections if he could get away with it.
Well, I mean, people have been saying that over and over again. I don't think the guy likes to be some part of him doesn't even like to be president. So I guess I'm a little bit of a, you know, show me, prove to me, but he doesn't have democracy or republicanism, this idea of shared power in his heart. He has said before he wishes that he didn't have the Congress to deal with in decision-making. And when I heard that, I thought, this guy has no concept of how ill-prepared he is for the office. I mean, it would be so much worse. Aaron, I've got to go. Thanks for the call. Folks, we have to take a break here. But somebody who's ill-prepared for office saying that, you know, basically, I'm going to do it my way. It's just terrifying. 6:35. We'll be right back. Later on the TV, talk about the fudge and family. Reminded me of you. The expectation left to come on. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this? It's Kelly. Who's this? Hello, it's Kelly. Who's this? It's Kelly. Who's this? So here's a question that at some point people need to ask themselves. What are these guys or people trying to do, these Muslim fanatics? What do they want? Why are they killing people? What belief system would lead you to go and kill random people and then think that you're doing the Lord's work, you know? And that you're going to you know, I mean, one of the things that it is said about Christianity, the God in Christianity in the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, is that God is love, right? Especially in the New Testament, you've got Corinthians, love is patient, love is kind, blah, blah, blah. So the God in the Bible is a loving character, is a loving being, and which causes us to ask, what is the God in Islam? I mean, how is it possible that the God that created this universe would want his followers to go around and just randomly kill people in his name? You know, 523-1450. If you're Muslim, feel free to call in. I'll give you the mic all day. But I just find it as kind of astounding that there's a group of people out there who believe that their God is the God of justice and killing and, you know, basically murder. We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
That's Jerry. Good morning, Kelly.
Morning, Jerry. What's up?
Did you hear what Rick Santorum, his explanation of not allowing the refugees to come in, the reason why?
No.
Okay, this is it. In order to have a caliphate over there, they have to have land. If ISIL or ISIS, the first letter in there is Islamic State. If they don't have a state, then you can't have a caliphate.
Okay.
The caliphate is a draw for more terrorists. And their reason for having the caliphate is so they can help start controlling and ruling the world and have Ahmadi come in and bring it to the world to an end according to the Islamic religion.
Yeah.
And have superiority and bring in their version of what they call heaven. So that's the whole motive behind all of this.
Correct. And
so if we deny,
connect the dots.
If we allow them to bring in refugees, bring everybody out of that area, we're aiding the Islamic State in creating that caliphate.
All right. Interesting. Thanks a lot, Jerry. Have a good day. All right. So, all right. Yeah, I was reading over the weekend. I have this a book called The Messianic Movement in Islam or whatever. I could get the title of it for you if you were interested. But I was kind of fascinated in the history of Islam. You've got first the development of a political theory. There is, like Jerry was saying, there's a certain area of land and it's Muslim and everything. It is only after the political theory of Islam is laid down that you have the theory of what the Christians called soteriology is actually salvation. So you've got the salvation theory coming after the political theory. Now, that is kind of strange in some ways, because you would figure first this person would show up and say, this is how you get saved, and this is who God is, and this is, you know, these are the theological principles. And then you would take these principles and apply them to the society, and then you would develop your political theory, right? But it's totally inverted in Islam. And so they developed another theory, because there was kind of a debate over the heirs of Muhammad. And there's this, which I will not get into too much, but the Muslims reject Christianity in part because God would never come to earth in the form of a human being. That's the most ridiculous thing in history, in their opinion. So, but even for the son of Muhammad to come and have some sort of special purpose kind of steps in this territory as well. So anyway, you've got the Shia and the Sunni, but the issue is, how does somebody become saved? I'm going to tell you, take a little break here. I'm going to tell you how somebody gets saved in Islam when we come back. It's probably not what you think. 640, maybe it's exactly what you think. 644, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, 523-1450. That's 523-1450 at 44. And for your temperature, I've got 35 degrees and sunny today. And we'll be right back with that.
I'm on the TV. Yeah, she had another quality. The way you used to love. And I know you have a ready.
Hey, it's Kelly. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. I'm not. I'm usually a texter. I usually don't call in.
Who is this?
I was wondering. I'm the lady that called you that day.
First name.
Fran.
Folks, well, we're on the air, Fran. Hold on a second here. So, Fran, hold on just a second. We're on the air right now.
Can I call you at your office?
No.
I don't want to come on the air.
Thanks, folks, for tuning in. 647. Fran's on the air. Fran, did you have a point?
No, I just wanted to see if you had checked out that book by Ann Corcoran on refugee resettlement and the Hijra to America.
I haven't, actually. I'll write it down.
Okay.
But do you have a point or a question?
No, I just think that this Syrian influx would be the extension of that.
Okay,
or
I'll
the
look into
continuation
it.
Of that. If you want to check it out.
Well, what's the, just so people are not overly curious, what is the point?
No, the point was I just wanted to see if the audience had read Ann Corcoran's book.
But what does her book say?
That these refugees are being brought to the United States through the different church organizations. You'd mentioned it before.
Yeah, the Catholics, as a matter of fact, which is very disturbing to me because the Catholic Church really shouldn't be getting involved. If we're going to have separation of church and state here, the Catholic Church shouldn't be an organ of bringing these people in. Which, you know, it's just so frustrating.
Right. And it's not just the Catholic Church. There's a total of 9 organizations and there's a money flow. So follow the money trail.
Well, I'm sure the Methodists are probably involved too. But thanks for the call and talk to you later, friend. All right, folks. I've got a little clip here. They're right now hunting down, they've got 1,000 police hunting down a suspect in. Brussels to the Paris bombing. And actually, let's take a break and I'm going to try to, my computer's acting a little funky here, but let me try to get this clip up there for that so you can hear that before the break on the hour. 649 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. All right, so some of the headlines today, there was stories about the number of refugees that we're getting over the border down here. In the meantime, they're looking for some of these terrorists in Belgium where their home base was. Check this out.
Terror raids and arrests in Brussels and a very real imminent threat of an attack. At least one, maybe more, sending one of the great cities of Europe into lockdown. I'm Harris Faulkner. This is the Fox Report. Belgian officials holding a news conference after today's raids. It just wrapped up. We've been covering it for you this hour live in breaking news. At least 22 now we're learning. The number has bumped up just today. As many as 16 people arrested. Brussels, Belgium, usually a city hopping with tourists. Now more closely resembling, well, earlier today, a war zone. Military vehicles on the streets. The military out in force. People hunkering down and told to stay away from the windows. Universities, schools, businesses, mass transit, all stay closed as Belgium remains on its highest terror alert over what officials are warning as a possible Paris-style attack. Here is Belgium's prime minister from earlier.
We are fearing a similar attack to that which took place in Paris, involving several individuals who might launch an attack on several different locations at the same time. We have information that leads us to believe that the potential targets are places which are regularly frequented. We are thinking, for example, of commercial centers or streets, or another example might be the public transport system.
Brussels is a city roughly about 1 million people. It is the home of NATO and the European Union. It's also where the Paris attacks, we're told, were plotted. The Belgian people, understandably, on edge. Well, really, everybody watching this. But one man put it best in an interview, saying he was not scared, and that if Belgium could survive the 1940s, then they could surely get through this. Let's bring in Mike Baker, former covert operations officer with the CIA. Mike, as you're watching this unfold, I'm curious to get your thoughts on what this federal prosecutor said. They did not get Salah Abdeslam, who they were looking for in regards to or in connection with the Paris attacks, but they got a whole lot of other people. So intelligence-wise, what does that tell you?
Well, again, I think we have to keep Abdeslam in perspective. He's not, certainly wasn't a mastermind. He's not Lex Luthor. It would have been nice to pick him up because obviously that could have provided some additional context into the atrocities that they committed in Paris. But there's more to this raid. I mean, they're not just in Brussels. They're in Charleroi. They're in Liège. They're in Antwerp. They're in several suburbs. It's a big effort to wrap up a number of what they would consider to be support cells, individuals who, frankly, some they've been monitoring for a period of time, and others who came onto the radar screen as a result of what happened to Paris.
All right, so this is a much longer report here, but so here's the issues in my mind. In the backdrop of worldwide jihad, we've got attacks in Paris. We've got attacks in Bali. We've got attacks in all over the Middle East. And so the question is, when's the attack in America coming? It's got to be coming because these people hate our guts, these radicals. For me, the upshot is, what are we doing to protect ourselves? We have got, let me just read some of the headlines that I've seen this morning. You see this obstinate, self-righteous position that the president has taken, and then we hear that he does not read any information that he disagrees with ahead of time. Now I'm looking at 150 persons on a flight from Mexico were allowed to skip customs and leave the JFK airport. Record surge of illegals in October. 5 more Syrians stopped in Texas. Refugees arriving for last 2 years. So how many, let me ask you this, how many people from Syria went into Mexico and then crossed here? If essentially 95% or more of the people crossing the border into America are not apprehended, we're told we have a couple thousand people here, but what if we have 5,000, 10,000? I mean, who knows? Right? I mean, they've got millions of people streaming out of Syria and have had since this war started. New federal guidelines quietly changing immigration enforcement. In the meantime, Border Brigade is the headline, vets patrolling for terrorists. So, and that sounds to me like it's a posse. It's a private posse. We've got our hands full, and here especially in on the border as we are, and I'm looking up, and this is actually from Sasabi, Arizona, this clip that I'm going to have for you when we come back. We've got our hands full here because one of the places that you would want to try to cross, in my opinion, is you could either find some place out in the middle of nowhere to cross, but if you could cross in a heavily populated area like El Paso, then you could just kind of meld into the whole city is yours. The United States is yours if you come in. The president is obdurate. He is self-righteous. He is angry. The people he's angry with are not the terrorists, though. The people he's angry with are the Republicans and the conservatives who dare stand up against his ideas. The Syrians, we've been told by Obama, and he just gave a speech. He just flew somewhere and gave a speech. He's going to bring in more Syrians, and he's going to make it easier and faster for them to come in. So what is the purpose of our president? What is he trying to achieve? He's not trying to bring in a whole bunch of Christians. 659 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. We'll be right back after a break on the hour to take up these topics.
Lady Waiter on the TV. She had all the brains in the picture. Picture does not fit. You talk to me when you feel like it.
It's 7:06. Good morning. It's 35 degrees outside right now. And supposed to be sunny today. High of 64. And a low tonight of 30. And okay, so we've been talking, of course, about the problem with international radical Islam and the attacks in Paris, then the attacks in Bali. And the issue of whether it's a acceptable idea to bring in Syrians, and the president has said that he'd like to bring in 100,000 Syrians in the next few years. So, in the meantime, we have been informed that there's a couple of problems. Number one, a lot of the Syrian refugees are not Syrians. Number two, probably the majority of them. Number two, in contradiction with what some of the people have called up and said, it's not mostly women and children. It's mostly 72% of these are men and of the age that would go to war. So the main issue, the main problem is that we don't have any idea. We know that the Syrian refugees have been infiltrated by ISIS. Proof in fact, because one of the attackers in Paris was a Syrian refugee, supposedly. But we simply don't know what percentage they are. But even if it was a small percentage, we don't want those people in the country. The question is, would it be worth blocking the Syrian refugees from coming in, or any group of refugees, to stop terrorists from coming in? And my answer is, it goes without saying, yes. We don't want these people coming in and getting established in America so that they can go out and kill other people, kill Americans. Now, the response to that has been, don't you care? We have to do it. Somebody called up and said, you know, we have to do it. This is not a religious statement. This is who we are. This is not religion. That we have to do it because this is who we are. And my response is, why? We take in 70% of the world's refugees. Why do we have to prove that we're good by bringing in more refugees, some of which are ISIS radical fighters? Can you imagine any group of people that it would be more dangerous to bring in? And the president got angry. How dare you? Well, I just have a couple of questions. If the president is a Christian, as he claims to be, and if you challenge the president's Christianity, by the way, there's nothing worse you can do to a liberal, even though for the most part these liberals don't have any interest in Christianity per se. They would they'd fight to the death over the idea that Obama's a Christian. And that I don't get. I mean, how do you argue somebody else's Christianity? You know, when, you know, it's a big enough issue within the church as to who's saved and who's not. And then you have a group of people who are coming out and saying, basically, how dare you challenge someone else's Christianity when they don't even know what it means to be a Christian? All right. Here's a little bit on this Mali hotel attack.
In the former French colony of Mali at West Africa.
By the way, I've been saying Bali. No wonder I couldn't find it on the internet. It's Mali.
Deafening drumbeat of terror we've been witnessing struck in the former French colony of Mali in West Africa today. The U.S. State Department has just confirmed an American is among the dead. At least 20 people were killed after gunmen burst into a Radisson Blue hotel, firing in all directions. At one point, more than 100 people were held hostage, freed after a dramatic assault by government forces. It comes on the heels of several major terror attacks blamed on ISIS, from the plane bombing in Egypt to the attacks in Paris. But this one may bear the marks of an older foe. NBC's Richard Engel has the latest.
Just a week after Paris, another terrorist attack in Mali, targeting the capital's most luxurious hotel. An Al-Qaeda link group, not ISIS, claiming responsibility. Malian SWAT teams cautiously approach the hotel. Inside, at least two gunmen, armed with grenades and assault rifles, holding some 170 hostages, including about a dozen Americans. The terrorists released those who could prove they're Muslim by reciting passages from the Quran. A body under a blanket shows what they did to those who couldn't. Those jihadis, they killed everyone, anything that was moving, said one of the hotel staff. Upstairs, terrified hotel guests barricaded themselves in their rooms. Reinforcements arrived, helped by two American Special Forces soldiers who happened to be nearby and joined the effort. The siege continued all day until security forces finally managed to overpower and kill the gunmen and free the rest of the hostages. But by then, at least 19 hostages, including one American and a Malian soldier, were dead. The group claiming responsibility, an African jihadist organization linked to Al-Qaeda.
It should be also no secret to anybody that Al-Qaeda offshoots continue to exist and to metastasize in Africa. That's why we're working so hard in the international community to find ways to combat groups like this.
NBC News can't verify the claim, but the group has attacked Westerners in Mali before, and it has fought the French-backed government of Mali, a former French colony. This might not have been ISIS, but now Islamic militant groups everywhere are flying the flag of global jihad.
U.S. officials say the American who was killed worked for a non-governmental organization. Lester, a peace conference was about to begin at that hotel, which is why so many aid workers, diplomats, and U.S. military personnel were in the area. That high-profile event could have been the target and would explain the timing. Lester?
All right, there you have it. Now, I find it interesting that a French colony was attacked around the time of Paris, but you can say that it's ISIS versus Al-Qaeda. But the main thing, you know, the president had just said that Al-Qaeda or ISIS is contained. He had previously said, didn't he previously say Al-Qaeda is basically broken? Anyway, I don't understand why you would want to bring a group of people in that have undeniable terrorist mixture in with them. Now, you've got one of the officials in Beirut, one of the ministers over there, saying that we know for a fact that in this group of Syrians, there's a certain percent that are ISIS of any group that's going to be leaving, relocating. And he says, is it 1%? He said, I don't know, but that's people over there in the middle of it. And why wouldn't they? Wouldn't it be a dream come true if you're a young religious fanatic and your goal in life is to die for the cause and make the biggest impact that you can? Wouldn't it be a dream come true to be able to come here to, kill as many Americans as possible? We are the white devil. I'm going to explain what the UMA means when we come back, but here's a clip from Representative Lee Zeldin on stopping the flow of Syrian refugees into the United States.
The Paris attacks have prompted a firestorm of debate over the U.S. Syrian refugee program. My next guest says the president's plan to accept Syrian refugees must be put on hold, most importantly, because we can't identify the bad ones.
Joining me now is Congressman Lee Zeldin, member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He is among those backing legislation to halt Syrian refugees from coming to the United States. All right. Good evening, Congressman. Thanks for being with us. Now, tell us why you co-sponsored the legislation, and what do you say to those who say that you're being uncharitable, unchristian, and un-American?
Well, we have to halt the program. I mean, we know for a fact that ISIS wants to use the refugee program in order to gain access to America and terrorize us. The federal government is unable to properly vet these individuals to be able to tell us with certainty that, individual A, individual B, C, they aren't terrorist threats. So, you know, here we are debating 10,000 Syrian refugees. What about millions that we could be helping by doing something greater? Because the largest humanitarian victory that we can deliver is by wiping ISIS off the face of the earth. I mean, dropping bombs on their lap, putting rounds in their forehead.
But our commander chief isn't going to do that. And by the way, if we want to spend money on them, why don't we spend it on the VA, on the veterans who come back from these wars, and, you know, with fewer limbs than they started with?
Well, we understand that if we don't defeat the threat overseas, that we will be facing it more and more here at home. We have to eliminate the threat. I mean, step one is we have to be willing to identify the threat. You can't defeat a threat you're not willing to identify, but then you have to crush it, not run in place, not tread water or take out some of the bad guys, disrupt some of their command and control.
But why is the president saying that there's a rigorous check when the FBI, Director of Homeland Security, National Intelligence, they all say, yeah, we really can't. What is going on?
Because for the president, winning has to do with a popularity contest with domestic politics. Winning isn't about, you know, taking an ISIS member who wants to meet Allah and helping them with that introduction. That's the humanitarian victory that we could be providing for those refugees.
What do you mean, helping them to get there to meet Allah?
That's right. I mean, listen, they are asking for. I mean, we have highly motivated coalition partners now. I mean, France is motivated. Britain, Germany, I mean, even the Russians now are...
They took down their civilian liner. Let me ask you this. You had no problem getting the bill to halt the Syrian refugees through the House. Harry Reid says, don't worry, it's not going anywhere. Talk to me. What are the politics of this, getting this passed?
Well, with the Senate, a lot of people think that 54 Republicans, that makes a majority. With the current rules of the Senate and the rules that have been around for a really long time, you need 60 votes in order to invoke cloture and debate, have a vote. So I would say you could use a nuclear option. You could have 51 votes, which would allow it to pass the Senate. Otherwise, you need 6 Democrats. It's not going to happen. And Melissa, I would be happy to support the president's strategy to win if I thought he actually had one. But Congress can't, with a straight face, look at this president, whether it's defeating ISIS or with regards to this refugee program, especially with what we know, what the FBI director tells us, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Director of National Intelligence. We know what the right thing is. Voters know what the right thing is. They know that this isn't the JV team. They know that it's not contained, that more jobs isn't the answer. They know that strategic patience isn't going to make them just magically disappear. We want a president who is a commander-in-chief that is well-respected.
But we don't have it. He is not on the same page with the rest of us. And when they start playing politics and saying, you know, you're being unchristian by not letting them in, do you have enough to override a veto?
In the House, we have enough to override a veto. The legislation that just passed on Thursday had a veto-proof majority.
You did?
We did.
Okay. And look, Democrats came over and were part of the passing it as well.
All right. So it's one thing to claim that you're a great genius and that, I'm a super genius and in my opinion means more than other people's because I'm super well-informed. I'm very smart. And, basically I understand things that the average person doesn't because, you know, fill in the blank there. I don't know. I'm so smart that, it hurts. But to be told by various people that the president doesn't even pay attention to things that he doesn't agree with beforehand is a very troubling idea. You know, it means that he's never, ever going to change his mind because he doesn't have an open enough mind to be changed. I mean, it is the strangest thing that I've ever seen. How does he think that people are going to respect him if he doesn't even open his mind enough to listen to something that, you know, I mean, it's like a little kid, you know. Little kid doesn't want to do something, he's not going to do it. We'll take a break here. Kelly O'Connell, we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Sergio, how you doing?
Hey, good. Sergio, you usually have a little bit longer comment, so let me put you on hold and we'll come back after break, okay?
Sure.
Thank
sure,
you.
You
thank
bet.
You. All right. That's how you work with me, folks. That's how you work with me. All right. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 523-1450, and we'll be right back.
This man, you're rich old man, you know he call of a dead ringer. You got to save the man, plus your brother was a
Okay, 724, and your number to call in, 523-1450. We have Sergio here. Sergio, thanks for your patience, and what's on your mind?
Yeah. Well, I was listening to your conversation, and the point I want to make is I don't think that these 30s will get them, you know? I don't. The strategy, the strategy would be that we should learn from Vietnam. If we send in troops on a mass scale, they're going to have fire, you know, air bases. They're going to be targeted.
Who's going to be targeted? Be more specific. Where? What? Who?
Well, the troops, the American troops like they were in Vietnam. We have to learn from past wars.
But send them in where? Send them in where?
Pardon? Yeah, I have an echo.
You have an echo because I'm repeating myself because you're not answering where. Send them in where?
If we send them overseas to get them, you know? I mean, yeah, they want to send in troops over there. Am
yeah.
I correct?
Yeah.
In assuming that?
Yeah.
Okay, if we send in troops, we're going to send them in mass. They're going to set up fire bases like they had before. They're going to be hit with rocket mortar attacks.
Well, look,
I think we need to
look, Sergio. How are we going to defeat ISIS? If I mean, we're the only country in the world that has the military and has the willpower to go in and take these people on for whatever reason.
I'm
just
going to be
let me just finish.
You know that it's happened before.
What?
We need to send in elite troops in there. Find these terrorists, these
we
cowards.
We agree.
We need to target them, isolate them, and then take them out.
Yes.
We're not going to do it with a ground force because
Wait a minute. And not with Obama. Look, I think the average Democrat is deep down sick of Obama and is full of turmoil and disgust at how he conducts himself. I mean, how many different things is he going to say my word on this? This is the way to do it. I know better than you do. And then you find out that he doesn't even study anything he doesn't agree with. There are stories that are coming out in the last couple of weeks that I've noticed that state Obamacare is in a death spiral. It's falling apart. It's imploding. That that's one issue that he took on. That's his great achievement. Now we've got ISIS. We need leadership in the world. And his idea of leadership, I mean, if anybody knows what passive aggressiveness is, that's what the president is. That's what he does. He gets involved,
exactly.
And then he treads water, and then he'll make some statements. But I'm going to do this and do that, and we're doing everything he can. He said before, we're doing everything that we can in ISIS. His statements are so nonsensical, you can't even pay attention to him anymore.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something, Kelly. You know, until the terrorists are here
here,
and they start blowing up Walmarts,
they're
schools,
here.
Universities, you know, and once they start doing it, the people will be screaming for something. But until then, most people are going to say,
nope.
Let them in. It's the Christian
nope.
thing to do. It's what America
nope.
does. I think it's stupid.
No, 53% of the people do not want Syrians to come in here. It's only going to get worse for the president. You know, going around and pretending you're the smartest person in history is not the same as leadership.
Exactly. Precisely. Yeah, I agree. He has this mentality of a Caesar. You know what I mean? Like in that movie, The Gladiator, where the Caesar wanted to get rid of the Senate and just rule by himself and then his sister. It's the same thing. I mean, it's sad, but it's the mentality that I see.
Look, in my opinion, And obviously, you know, if you get in, people, if you're interested in this topic, get a, on Kindle. You can get a free application of Kindle to download on your computer. You can read.
Okay.
You can read. I'm talking to everybody, not just you. You can get a Kindle application that fills up your whole computer screen, so you don't have to have it on one of these tiny little devices. You can read books in Kindle Air. Just go into desktop Kindle application. Get a copy of Edward Klein's Amateur, and you will see how this guy has done the same thing since day one. He's never taken the Senate. He didn't take the Senate in Illinois seriously. He didn't take it seriously here. He only wants to give speeches. He's a revolutionary at heart. He is not interested in the details of government.
Well, that sounds exactly to him to the T. You've nailed it.
Thank you for the call, Sergio. Have a good day. All right, folks, if you got something to say, get it out in the beginning. Obama, Muslim call to prayer, one of the prettiest sounds on earth. And that is 2010. Listen to this.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Scary, huh? Does the president listen to that every day? Muslim call to prayer, one of the prettiest sounds on earth. Who would say that? There's a reason that a lot of people out there either don't know what the president believes or think he's a Muslim. We've got another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Ralph Kelly.
Hey, Ralph, what's up?
I have to agree with your last caller about history repeating itself. If history did repeat itself, we wouldn't have these problems. I flew over Nagasaki and Hiroshima on numerous, numerous occasions after the bombs were dropped. I was also in Japan. The Japanese would not make eye contact. They put the fear of God in them. And that's what we need. No boots on the ground. Go back to 1945, 46. And that will take care of the whole situation.
What is that supposed to mean?
Okay.
Thank you.
Pardon?
Oh, sorry. Cut him off early. Go back to 1935, 1936. That'll take the whole. All right. So the guy that says history, those who do not study history are destined to suffer under its effects is Santayana. And I'll get the exact quote here for you. But Santayana, one of the last great philosophers, and I believe he was a Spanish. Interesting guy. Those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. So anyway, so what does history teach us about this situation? Let's come back and talk about it. I was not aware that you couldn't go into the Middle East and defeat ISIS. Why not? Why? Vietnam was a war in a jungle with a large number of people, with a third party, China, involved, and I don't see that this is a direct correlation. 7:32. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell here. 523-1450. 523-1450. And we're going to come back and talk about history repeating itself. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, did I say 35 or 36? I've been 45, 46.
Yeah, you said 35, 36.
I'm sorry, Kelly. I was in such a hurry to get off the air. It's 45. That was when the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
So we got to nuke them?
Pardon?
We got to nuke them?
Absolutely, unequivocally. I've told you before on the air. It's genocide when you have people like that that are being trained from 3 and 4 years old, which came out on the TV, about a half an hour video of kids being trained. What else? What other choice do you have?
Fair enough. I'll pass on your message. All right. So I was looking for the title of this book that I had ordered. And on the Messianic movement in Islam. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Jerry, can I have round two, sir?
Go ahead, Jerry. Just keep it brief, please.
Okay. And this thing about the history repeating itself. We lost the Vietnam War in the living rooms of the United States. We did not lose it in Vietnam. Every one of them battles in Vietnam were won by our soldiers. They fought valiantly. They were professional soldiers, and they did win. But the hearts and minds of the United States people sitting in their living rooms were changed by reports coming out of Vietnam.
True.
So
reports actually that were directed by Walter Cronkite, who had said that we lost the Tet Offensive when he was lying.
Yes, sir. And we cannot let that part of it repeat itself here in the United States.
Jerry, let me ask you a question. Do you think we should send boots on the ground after ISIS?
I think that we need to arm the Kurds, and there's a couple other ones over there.
Yes or no? Yes or no? Jerry, come on. You're trying to toss out my question like a fish spitting out a hook. Come on now.
No, sir. I think we need to arm them, but I also think we need to train them, okay, because we are not giving them the full benefit
of what's
going on.
All right, so one more time. Jerry.
Yes, sir.
Hold on a second. Does the American military need to be over their boots on the ground to attack ISIS, yes or no?
Kelly, that's not – I'm a veteran, okay, and I did fight in war.
You might be a veteran to answer the question.
But that's not a yes or no answer.
It is for some people. Jerry,
proficient on this.
Jerry, we've got another call. Thanks for the call. Jerry refuses to come down one side or the other. He might be running for politics. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Eric.
Eric, hey, thanks for the call. Hope you're doing well. And what's on your mind?
I'm also a former veteran, and I don't believe we should put boots on the ground.
All right. What's your best argument against it?
What goals do you plan to achieve?
Well, all right. So I'm not a veteran and I've never served. But in my mind, if we sent the top soldiers in the world against ISIS, we wipe them out and we stop them from liquidating all the Christians in the region. And we stop them from going to other parts of the world and blowing people up, that we contain this cancer over there. And we,
Okay, what? Where's their capital? How do we start inflicting damage on them in a way that is permanent?
Their capital's in Syria, from what I understand.
But they have no geographical location.
They are
part of them are in.
Well,
part
I know
of them are in Syria.
I understand
part
that.
Part of them are in Iraq.
Eric,
they have no border.
Eric,
there are no fronts
Eric.
To this war.
Eric,
this war is almost identical
Eric,
to Vietnam.
Okay, folks,
we're
this is a little lesson.
Place,
if you don't allow yourself to be interrupted,
else.
This is what happens. I pull down the mic. Eric, I'm saying they're out there. They may not have a geographical capital, but they have camps. There's places where they're located. Why not hit them there?
You will. You'll hit them there, and they'll pop up someplace else.
Whack-a-mole. But, okay, so let them go.
Exactly
let them go across. Let them go across the Middle East and kill all the Christians and Jews. Is that your plan? Eric, is that your plan?
To become members of ISIS.
What's that?
How many people do they estimate per month are leaving foreign countries
all right,
to go
okay,
join ISIS?
All right, okay, so Eric, what's the answer? What's the answer to the problem?
The answer is we have to try to figure out some other way other than continually thinking that Americans are going to be the ones to rescue.
All right, but
the
what
world.
If we're the only ones? Eric, your answer is non-answer.
How did that work in Iraq?
Well, what if it's two different situations? What if Iraq
no, – we
well,
created
hold on,
ISIS
on. Eric,
by
Eric, what
Iraq.
If Iraq was a bad idea and this is a good idea?
And No, this is reaping a whirlwind from Iraq.
All right.
This is what.
Okay,
created.
Eric, let me ask you something. If somebody doesn't, and we tend to be the only person who's committed enough to get involved in these projects, if we don't do it and they're just let to run wild, what's going to be the outcome?
It's not going to be a good outcome, but this is the problem. This was the problem.
Are you libertarian?
There were a lot of people who said,
are you libertarian?
There is no Jefferson.
Folks, if you call in, we're going to have a conversation or you're going to end up being off the air. Eric.
We created this problem.
Eric.
You have people there who are willing to defend themselves.
Eric, this is not your show. You understand this is not your show. If I'm trying to ask you a question and you keep talking, at some point you're going to end up off the air. So let me ask you this. Are you libertarian?
Yes.
All right, then you don't believe in foreign engagement, period.
No, I don't believe – it's not that I don't believe in foreign engagement. I want declared wars like we did in 1941.
All right, so let me ask you this. If these people are rampaging across the Middle East, and according to you, it's partly our fault because of Iraq, don't we owe it just in the grand scope of things to at least to come in and mop up our mistakes?
Well, and I mean, that's part of what this refugee crisis is also, is mopping up our mistakes.
Well, I mean, what do you think about the idea? We're basically a Christian nation in our history. We look over there and the people that are taking it the worst are Christians, and they're asking people to convert or die. And they're cutting the heads of Christian children off. They're taking the Christian women and raping them. I read an article last night. They're telling him 10. If you have sex with 10 ISIS fighters, you'll become a Muslim. What are we doing to protect at least the Christians over there, if they're our brothers and sisters?
ISIS kills Muslims, too.
I understand that, but
they kill Muslims.
Eric.
Their biggest target is apostate Muslims.
I understand that, but you're not giving any answers. You're just saying what you don't want to do. You're not giving any kind of a – don't we have to try to make the world a better place, I mean, in some sense?
Why does it always fall on us? Maybe it's our faith.
Maybe like the Muslims say, it's kismet. Thanks for the call. I got to go. Kismet is this idea in Islam that fate is hardwired into reality and you can't escape your fate. That's why a large number of Muslims die, because they don't wear their seatbelts, because they say, my fate is my fate, my kismet. All right. We'll take a break here, and I'm going to come back and explain why the Ummah supports the notion of conversion by the sword. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 523-1450. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
This is Terrell.
Terrell, hold on 1 second. I got another caller. I'll be right back. Hey, this is Kelly. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Roger.
Roger, hold on. I got another call that came in at just the same time. I'll be right back. What are we going to talk about when we come on the air?
About the putting troops in the...
Okay, all right.
Into the ground troops.
I'll get to you as soon as I can, okay? We're on a break. Thanks. Yeah. What did you say your name was?
My name's Harold.
Harold, thanks. I think maybe a new caller. What do you want to talk about?
I just want to talk about these people don't even want their country in Syria. Why don't we just come over there, put a flag down, the American flag, and then welcome immigration back into Syria?
Okay, hold on. That's a great point. I'll put you on hold. We got a little bit of break, and I'll be right back, okay?
All right.
Thanks. Who's this? Folks, we have a couple of callers. Harold, go ahead. You wanted to say they don't care about their country, so we should go put our flag over there?
Yeah, I think we ought to, and then we can welcome immigration over there. I mean, you know, they can go through the whole process of vetting the immigration before you can come to the United States in Syria. You know, you just build a big old bunker and they don't want their country. They're fleeing all these fighting age men are wanting to come to the United States for what reason? I don't know. Unless we, you know, put it into where you know, I guess at one time, in order to come over to immigration, he had to serve in the military.
We should bring that back. I got a couple of more calls, but good point. Thank you. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Roger, is that you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the only way we're going to fix things over there is send troops on the ground and a large amount of leave the area. No,
yeah, I agree. I agree.
Keep them in there.
I agree 100%. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Ted. There's a paradox over there. We can't send them arms because we don't know who they are, and we can't trust that they won't turn the arms against us. So now we're going to throw the gates open and bring them over here.
That's a bizarre paradox, and it's a very troubling that we admitted we can't arm them because we don't know who's an ISIS and who isn't, but now we're going to bring them over here, and the very petulant president is going to say, try to stop me.
Exactly.
Thanks
Kelly.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
All right, Mike, hold on just a second. We'll got to take a break. We'll be right back. All right, folks, got Mike on the line there. And, oh, by the way, the book Islamic Messianism, The Idea of the Mahdi in 12er Shiaism, published in 1981 by Abdulaziz Abdul Hussein Sakadina. And one of the best books I've ever bought explains a whole lot of stuff about Islam. And all right, so we got Mike on the line, and we're going to be back and talk to him. And anyway, just too much to cover, but we'll try to get into it a little bit before we get off the air. And we've got Mike on the line. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, Kelly, I was just going to say, I don't think we have to do anything. I think Putin's cleaning it up pretty good. And I think it's Ezekiel 38. Do you know that Iran's got troops over there in Syria right now, and Russia's already sent 150,000 ground troops?
Oh, I was not aware of that.
If you look biblically, they got Syria. Turkey's going to be next. It's going to be the countries from the north, Gog and Magog. And they're going to eventually surround Israel and invade. It's a Zionist against the atheist, or the Christian against the Zionist. I mean, the Zionist against the Muslim. It's Albert Pike.
And
the Luciferian, who's the atheist,
Mike,
just sits in the background and waits.
Mike, remember what happens when you keep talking. Albert Pike, who was a Luciferian, who you follow to interpret the Bible, who's a devil worshiper, who's your...
No.
Yes.
Kelly, I don't follow him to interpret the Bible.
Yeah, you're
but
quoting
I'm just saying that
you're
he predicted
quoting
all
him.
Three wars.
Mike, remember what happens when you don't play well with others. You have stated, you yourself stated he was a Luciferian, and you're using him to interpret the Bible. How can you use a devil worshiper to interpret the Bible?
First off, I'm not a follower of Albert Pike. I'm
you mention
saying,
him. You quote him all the time.
But I think all the Masons, Kelly. They got a statue
of
Albert Pike
less.
In Washington, D.C.
I don't care if all the Masons and Bolivians and bird collectors quote him. That's not relevant.
Well, he must be influential because he was the founder of the KKK.
Why?
And they won't even take down a statue in Washington, D.C.
Wait a second. Wait a minute, Mike.
They'll remove the rebel flag.
Mike, Albert Pike is a founder of the KKK, and you're a follower of his.
I'm not a follower of his.
You're quoting him every time you
go. I don't follow, Kelly.
Mike.
I don't follow anybody. I follow Jesus Christ, period.
Why would Jesus Christ... In your following of him, tell you to use a devil worshiper and KKK founder as an interpreter to the Bible? That's absurd.
He doesn't say that, but Kelly, I follow the Bible. It says Ezekiel 38, Gog and Magog. They're going to invade Israel.
Why would anybody?
It's happening, right?
Uh huh. All right. Okay, Mike. Thank you. Have a good day. End of ISIS, Putin sending 150,000 soldiers to Syria to wipe out evil Islamic State, and that is mentioned in the Express 4 days ago. So Russia does not have 150,000 troops over there, but they are saying that they plan on sending them over there. All right, here is from Arizona. There's old veterans that are guarding the border. Check this out. Okay, of course I can't get it to play. I've had a lot of computer problems today, but here we go. Let's check, see if I can do it now. It's kind of warming up here. Well, I'll have to save this. All right, here we go. To save this one for tomorrow for you. But there's a group of old vets who are going out once a week, once a month, whatever, and they're going out to guard the border. All right, so should we send in troops? And if just for the sake of the argument, if they were to send in 150,000 troops, they're supporting the Assad regime because they're friends with Assad. In the meantime, Obama has said Assad has to go a couple years ago. Now, is it possible if we sent our troops over there that we could get into a conflict over Syria with Russia? And that's the problem with allowing things to play out on their own. The guy that called up earlier, who's a libertarian and says we shouldn't be involved with ISIS with boots on the ground, is saying that because he doesn't believe that boots on the ground belong anywhere. We do have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Jerry. Round three, Kelly.
Please. Oh, God, Jerry. Yeah, go ahead. Briefly. Briefly. Jerry. Jerry. Jerry, Jerry, Jerry,
Syria.
Jerry, Jerry. Okay, folks, if you don't listen, I'm just going to hang up on you. Listen, if you have a point, especially if you're calling back four or five times, thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Larry.
Hey, Larry, what's up? Go ahead.
I'm a semi-retired Marine after 28 years.
God bless you. Semper Fi.
We need to put boots on the ground over there and put stuff in the air. And just seek out and destroy all them suckers wherever they pop up, and it don't matter what country they're in.
I agree 100%, but I mean, I don't have the experience like you do, so I appreciate the call. Thanks. Have a good day. All right, folks, if you call in, here's like I should go over this once a week. What makes a good caller, not for me, but for the listeners, get to your point. If you have to make three calls to make your point, you're not being efficient. Or you're trying to get too many points on, but just get to your point and allow interaction, because what I'm trying to do at some level is bring up questions that I think are coming to the minds of people who are listening. So who's the person who called up? I think it was Sergio. I said, you mind if I put you on hold? Yeah, no problem. You don't have to throw a fit if I ask you to just wait over a break. Anyway. Okay. So, we're in a situation now where we've got an unprecedented number of people coming across the border. According to one of the stories that I read last October, broke a record. So if you're a Syrian, why would you try to go through the normal channels? Why not just go and fly to Mexico and drive up to the border, get taken up to the border, and then cross the border? I mean, I want to know how many people have come from other countries of the world to come in here and have crossed the border and are now living here. I mean, it's got to be in the millions, right? And we've taken 70% of the world's refugees in the last X number of years. So why do we have to prove anything to anybody with the Syrian refugees? I do not accept the statement that some people have put on the air that because we caused part of the problem over there, that we have to pay for it. The idea that we have to bring in killers as part of this, you know, this is like this payment that we have to make. I don't agree with it. Let them stay over there and kill each other over there. Don't we have any duty to the women and children, the innocent people over here, to not let them get blown up? Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, thanks for listening in AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, and we'll meet you back in 22 hours. Have a great day. Ciao. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for listening in. Lady, right. Hey, this is Kelly.
Hey, Kelly. Great show you did today. This is David. I was the market down in Farmer's Market.
Yeah, how's it going, man?
Okay, you're off the air. Very good talk show, and it is amazing all the books that you have read.